Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you are listening to episode, is it 59 or 60?
No, it's the same as your age.
It's 59.
No, 60.
Oh, it's 60 now. Okay,
yes.
Well, technically I don't turn 60 until December 8th, just in case anyone wants to buy me anything.
But okay,
anyway,
so.
My wife had the party last Saturday because everybody was going to be there. You know, it was Thanksgiving
weekend. Oh, is that what
weekend,
it was? I saw that on your Facebook page. So.
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, it was lovely.
Lovely. Okay, well, so if anybody wants to make donations to Matt, give them your PayPal address.
Yes.
So. Anyway.
No, just send booze. You know,
that'll work.
Yeah, that's fine.
We have on the phone, on the line with us, Mark Becker.
To business, yes, to seriousness.
Now,
yes, please.
Back to the show.
Okay. Happy birthday, Matt.
Oh, thank you.
I'll just give you my PayPal account over the air.
Okay,
that's cool.
Yeah, it's just us on the line here, right?
So, well, I think your wife is listening, right, Matt?
Yes.
So, okay, good.
We're up in the...
Your son in Minneapolis?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Okay,
it
right.
Depends what he's got going at work.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, getting back to the show. We have Mark Becker, a partner at CDH, and they're out of Grand Rapids. They have another facility here in downtown Detroit. And we're going to be talking about some of these really nasty attacks that have been going on. There was one back on October 21st that everyone, I'm sure, remembers because it brought down portions of the internet on the East and West Coast. But I have just been informed by Mark that another one occurred today in Germany. Tell us all about that, Mark.
Yeah, so if you were a customer, none of you listeners are probably, from Deutsche Telekom, about a million of their customers got knocked off yesterday. And part of today, probably while they were doing their Cyber Monday shopping, about 900,000 routers. The router is the device that sits on your own network. Usually it's a wireless device as well that connects to the telecom provider or the ISP that connects you to the internet. So basically when that router got attacked by hackers, kept them off the internet for about a day. So they fixed it. But took about a day. So
much for Cyber Monday in Germany, right?
So much for Cyber Monday, which, you know, you would think, wow, this is a pretty good attack surface right now with everybody getting on their computers and, you know, trying to find the good deals, maybe clicking on stuff they shouldn't click on, thinking that that's a deal when it's really some sort of a virus or malware or something. So, yeah. Yeah, and the other one, the 21st of October, was a little more scary in the sense that an attack could be unleashed against one company, and some fairly big companies were relying on that company. So the company that was attacked was DIN, and it brought down Netflix, Amazon, Twitter, Spotify, Tumblr, Reddit, and
Just a few little e-commerce sites.
Just imagine if that would have happened today. That'd be really bad.
Big deal. Imagine that happening on Cyber Monday.
Yes.
That would dip into a few corporations' pockets. And what was interesting about that attack was it was conducted by devices in your home. So if you have an internet-connected Nest temperature controller, or you have a router in your home, or you have an internet-connected refrigerator. All of these internet-connected devices, IoT is what they call them, all woke up on the same day at the same time and all started attacking this one company. And that's how they brought it all down.
I know we have a Nest here just outside the studio door, so maybe it's one of those culprits.
Yeah, it could be. You could have been one of the attackers and not even known about it.
So those things are connected to the internet, and to say that they attack someplace is kind of not quite exactly right, because all they're doing is hitting up a website for information, right? But when there's millions of them at once,
they're pinging, right?
They're pinging. In this case, they used a technique called amplification. So they made a request of DIN for a domain name. The amplification happens when you send a small request and you get a lot of information back, which a DNS server would give you. that amplifies the attack. That makes it bigger, clogs up the pipe. And these attacks, all they're doing is they're just crowding the internet freeway with packets so that no legitimate business can be done. And that's all they did. They broke the record this time, and there was 1 terabyte per second. Oof. In terms of requests going across the internet. It's never happened before.
So what do you think? Was that a probe? Was that a test? What do you think that was?
At the time, it was before the election, so a lot of people believed that it was possibly the Russians doing a test to see if they could compromise our systems during the election, but that never came about. So, you know, a lot of the theory is it was just, vandalism, cyber vandalism. But it pointed out that the U.S., that our system, our internet system, is pretty easy to bring down and could be very costly to business. And you know, if you have devices that rely on the internet, say 911 or something like that, and they rely on the internet, that could make them very vulnerable to something like this.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so talk about what.
Anyway, happy shopping out there.
Yes, right. Make sure you just don't click on the wrong site, right? So
yeah, exactly.
So CDH. So what can you guys do to help businesses keep the bad guys out?
Well, you know, obviously, there's a lot of best practices that businesses can do that they don't know about. And, you know, maybe they don't have an IT specialist working for them, and or maybe that person is too busy. So what we would suggest at a minimum is just have an assessment, have us come in for 3 days and do some penetration testing, which is testing from the outside of your network in to see if we can get in. Do some vulnerability testing. That's testing from the inside out to see what's vulnerable inside your network. And then do a best practices review. A lot of companies don't practice any of the best practices, like, you know, changing passwords, complex passwords, you know, devices with known passwords that are published out on the internet. All these routers that are out there all have, you know, admin as their user and admin as their password. Oops, I just told everybody. And if you don't change those, they're really easy to hack. So, you know, an assessment to begin with would be where you would start, just to make sure that you're not vulnerable. Now, you're probably not, you know, Twitter or Amazon. You're not an exciting attack, but it's still good practice to have that, because this Nest device that's right outside of your office, that device became a cyber bot to attack somebody else because somebody in your office clicked on something, got some malware, and then that malware scanned the inside office's devices for these Internet of Things devices like the Nest, and that's how it got there. So pretty easy to prevent, but you've got to practice good computing, safe computing.
Safe computing, yes. That'll be our new term.
Okay, and we will use some sort of, one might almost say, prophylactic measure. In order to prevent problems.
Little drum roll there.
Okay.
Okay. So what else can folks do? I mean, so they bring you guys in for 3 days, you do your assessment, how else can they work with you guys?
Well, you know, that's just one of the areas that we're consulting in. We're business consulting around SharePoint and websites, intranet, search. We're doing, working with Active Directory and the data center and Exchange and all those things as well. Typically, though, when we're working on these things, we're also consulting on security, because security is everywhere. It's not just kind of a thought that passes and you do it once and you walk away. So even when we're consulting on something like Active Directory Exchange, we're looking at your best practices around security and are you secure? Because these days, you're more connected to the web than you ever have before, with cloud computing and all of that. So it's, you're even more vulnerable than we have in the past. And everybody knows the most secure network is one that's not connected to the network. Well, you can't do that. You have to be connected, but you can do it safely, like Matt suggested with his comment earlier.
Yeah, I just don't know exactly what that would be. Define what that device would be, Matt. So,
well, I'm sure it would fit into a rack. We'll put it that way.
Yeah. Okay.
No, but it's it. But seriously, what are some of the you know best practices that you're telling people to do to avoid these things these days?
Well, everybody has these days. They have a firewall in place between them and the internet. Some places have what's called a DMZ, where they have two firewalls, one facing the internet, one that's facing their own private network. And in the middle, they have, if they're doing it right, they have detection devices that are watching everything that's coming across, inspecting everything, and then only letting through the good stuff. On the way out, when people are browsing the internet, you know, at a minimum, they should have updated virus protection and malware protection, so that when they do click on something, because you know they will, they'll click on something. Something's there immediately to detect it and make sure that it doesn't spread. It's caught right at the device. So those are really easy basic things to do, but a lot of people don't do them. You know, that's one of the things we'll point out and you know, show to the executives. Hey, you're not up to date. You don't have this protection. You know, these are the things that can cause problems in your business. And then, if, you know, to remedy it, you go out and get, you know, the best you can get for those devices and apply them.
We have about a minute and a half left, so let's get back to now. You've told people how to fix some of these problems, but how do they get in touch with you guys so they can set this up and get your 3-day? And is that a free assessment, or do you charge them for that, or how do you do it?
Yep, we're in the business of making money, so 3-day assessment would be under $5,000, and you know, you can contact us at cdh.com. Pretty easy. Cat, dog, Harry, just cdh.com.
I've always wondered what that stood for. So,
yeah, that's what it stands for.
Cat, dog, Harry. I'm going to remember that now. If they want to reach you personally, since I know you're a partner there, Mark, so do you want to give out your email address?
Sure. Mark B at cdh.com. MarkB at cdh.com.
Okay.
You can call me.
Yes. And then email you. And then hopefully, are you going to start your beer and mingle things again back in January or February? Are you going to start that up?
I think we've got a February planned. We've got I've got a 3-month brew that might be ready in February. That one should be pretty exciting. But yeah, we've got some brews coming out in the next month, and hopefully we won't drink them before February.
All right, we'll leave it at that. We have to end this segment, but we'll be back with Dan Lorman from Security Mentor. This has been Mark Becker, a partner at CDH, and this is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch, and you're listening to the M Squared TechCast.
Hey, it's Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Roush.
And you're listening to the second segment of M Squared TechCast on our 60th show, celebrating Matt's 60th birthday on December 8th.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to the club, you know?
Yeah, so, thanks. Yes.
We know Dan Lorman's
doesn't,
a whole lot.
Doesn't hurt
Dan,
a bit. So
Dan Lorman's still 39. He's still a young man.
Quite. Yep.
Not quite? Okay, but you're still with Security Mentor, right?
Yes, I am. I am the Security Mentor, yeah. I'm over here in Grand Lodge, Michigan.
All right, and you used to be the Chief Information Security Officer at the state, as well as the CIO, and but over 17 years you had many titles, right?
Yeah, a lot of different roles in Michigan, CTO, CISO, CSO, yeah, so all the kind of alphabet soup with state government.
Okay. Well, in our first segment, we had Mark Becker on from CDH, and he was talking about how the Germans just got hacked today, and yep. Deutsche Telekom is down. And then we referred back to the October 21st situation in the U.S. where, you know, East and West Coast went down. So what's going on out there, Dan?
Yeah, well, and over the weekend, the other one is in San Francisco. They hacked the metro on Saturday.
Oh, right,
Free fares for anybody wanting to ride the BART system, I think, in San Francisco, the Bay Area Rapid Transit.
And that was ransomware.
Quite a few hacks in the last couple of weeks, and it's just kind of more of the same. I mean, it's ongoing challenges.
I think I was reading about that over the weekend. They wanted a large number, like 375 bitcoins, which I don't know if that translates into millions of dollars, but it was a big sum of money.
Yeah, Bitcoin is in the four figures now in terms of dollars, right?
Is it?
So yeah, I think it is. So yep, that's a lot of dough.
A lot of dough, but of course, everybody's getting free rides in San Francisco, so they're probably pretty happy about that. Well, at least the riders are anyway, right? So
at least for a couple of days.
Yes. So what else is going on out there? I mean, how do we beat these guys back? I mean, they seem to be getting the upper hand.
Yeah, I mean, it's an ongoing challenge. And, one of the other things I wanted to talk about today, and I just sent you and Matt a blog post, maybe you can post it to My Tech News. But, you know, the big thing in Michigan, right as we speak, everyone's talking about the recount. And, Jill Stein coming forward with, the possibility of hacking and I actually came out with a blog with a little bit of a contrarian view that the trouble with recounts in the name of hacking, and that is the Department of Homeland Security actually really saying that they had not seen any. Of course, we had hacks of Hillary Clinton servers, we had email hacks and other things that may have influenced the election, but as far as actual voting machines in Michigan or in Pennsylvania or in Wisconsin, there was no evidence of any tampering with, you know, counting the vote. And I actually wrote a piece that's actually getting quite a lot of attention right now with its 10 reasons why I actually think it's the recount is the recount. I mean, I'm not in the politics as far as, you know, Republican, Democratic. I'm staying out of that, but I'm just, you know, from calling it, you know, we need to recount because of hacks, I think is actually problematic because there was a vote was done in Michigan with integrity, and there's really zero proof of any actual hacking that actually happened or malware or illegal tampering with the voting machines themselves.
Well, yeah. So what, I mean, you know, what do you think of the argument that here in Michigan our systems are so low tech that they're sort of immune? I mean, that's where I'm at after having covered elections in Michigan from the midterms of 1978 until this year. This state doesn't use the most problematic of the electronic voting machines, right? It uses optical scans, so there's still a paper trail.
That's exactly right, Matt, and they're not connected to the internet. There's a number of other, you know, they can go through the process, but, I think that people have shown that it may be theoretically possible to alter some machines, but again, moving from theoretically possible to actually having it happen, there's been a certification. It looks like there will be a recount in Michigan. It's not for sure, but I guess they just certified the vote this afternoon.
I was going to say, it's close enough to have one, right? So
10,000 votes. That's pretty tight.
It has to be paid for. It has to be paid for by Jill Stein raising this money from the website. They raised, $6 or $7 million, and so the candidates can ask for it. But my fear, more reason why I'm saying this, back to your question, Mike, is I think it does. If anybody can just say there may have been a hack for anything, whether it's voting, whether it's I can see my kids doing this with their grades, right? Something got hacked, therefore, that's why this happened. It almost becomes a, the possibility of a hack becomes an excuse, which, I find problematic. I really think that government resources will have to be diverted to do this, and it's going to take away from other projects, and it's actually probably not going to change I don't think it's going to change the result overall, whether you're Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump or whatever. The country voted, and I think that this sets sets a dangerous precedent. Anybody can say, there may have been a hack, therefore we need to do a recount.
Yeah, there was a U of M computer engineer. I read his piece, I think it was about a week ago, where he said some of the machines, I don't think it would have involved Michigan, but some of the machines that used a touch screen, there was like in those precincts, there was an odd number compared to what the polls were saying. And let's not get into the polls, because clearly there wasn't very many of them, not even close, right? But, they're just trying to have is assure people that everything is okay.
Certainly maybe be clear. Jill Stein, has a right to do this. There's a legal process, and to follow in the process, nothing illegal happening. And I guess, my comment in this blog was more around the view that, using hacking in the name of hacking, saying because they're, because the Russians may have hacked an email server, or because, these other hacks may have happened, there's a lot of hacking surrounding, the election, therefore that justifies a recount. And I think the Department of Homeland Security and a lot of people, as you mentioned, my background is in government, and I worked for Governor Granholm and Governor Engler and Governors, Rick Snyder, our current governor, and, seeing the process and what they go through. And I think, there are a lot of hacks, as you started. It's happening in lots of different places, potentially in Germany right now, in San Francisco. And there's plenty of times where it really there are significant breaches or hacking is occurring, where there's no proof of it actually occurring. I just think we need to be clear that, we're trying to build integrity into the process, and that the process is checking. I think the hacking, I think the recount will go forward. I just have the view that doing this recount in the name of hacking, I think, is problematic.
Yeah. Well, like you say, it is going through. I was amazed that you raised the $8 million, but not really, because I think a lot of people are upset because there's such a difference in the popular count. And so they figure, well, heck, there's got to be something going on, right? But it's just funny how the Electoral College plays out, and I'm sure that's going to be reviewed, and whether we keep that or not remains to be seen.
Well, there's been a number of really good articles. The Wired magazine's got a great article, and there's some others about, some things that could be done in the future to do kind of automatic audits, random samplings of votes to verify that, we could maybe improve the process. I'm all for those things, and I think they make a ton of sense. Going forward, I think there's going to be a lot learned from this election. I suspect that by 2020, when we have 4 years from now, when we vote again for presidential election, the process could be very, very different. And, who knows what we'll be using, encryption or other technology to allow people to maybe have more confidence in the process. But I think right now, like I said, in Michigan and in the Midwest, in my view, that the process worked very well. And, the Homeland Security, a lot of people involved, people I've talked to felt like that it was a fair process. Now, obviously, if we go forward with a recount, we'll see. Hopefully that'll all be verified. But, it's interesting times. The other big news today, guys, and I know we've got a couple minutes left here, today's Cyber Monday. I don't know if you've already been sharing any tips for the holiday season for listeners.
No, go right ahead.
Yeah, feel free.
Things that people can be doing to, you know, to make sure that, you know, as they shop online, I mean, there's a ton of deals out there right now, and there's a great travel deals at Travelocity.com. I'm not going to go through all the different deals that are out there. They're out there today, but really throughout the holiday season, there are some really great deals. The first thing I would say is just make sure that your mobile devices are updated. You know, you've got the latest, you know, so many, whether you have an iPhone, an Android device, whatever it is, have you applied the latest patches? Have you updated the apps? Because as these vulnerabilities are found in these apps, usually, you know, Google or Apple are right on those and they update them. But people who haven't actually done those updates, which, you know, sometimes can take, you know, 10 or 15 minutes with your device, and people hold off doing that, just encourage people to make sure their home software, their PCs, their laptops, but or their mobile device, which more and more people are shopping with their mobile device now, is updated with the latest software. That'd be one tip. There's two others I'd give to listeners. One, you know, be wary of links. You know, we always keep saying that phishing, and there's so many stories out there. But if it's something seems like it's too good to be true, go to the website. Don't just click on the link. Go out. Go to the website yourself, to, you know, Travelocity.com or whatever, and find it there where you know it's really coming from the source and not maybe from some malicious hacker who's sending you a link that's going to download malware or something, or do something else, like you just mentioned, ransomware or something. So, you know, be wary of that. And then as you buy, I think most people have heard this, most people listening to this show know this already, but make sure you're using encryption, SSL, with that lock, that you're not, you know, ever, you know, putting your credit card information or other information online when you buy without having HTTPS, the SSL encryption or that lock. It's pretty common sense tips you can use, but I think even sometimes security experts need to be reminded of that.
Okay, about a minute left. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Security Mentor and how folks can reach you to get more information?
Sure. No, Security Mentor, we do awareness training for end users, really helping people use engaging, interactive, gamification type of approach to help people understand the importance of their actions online. We work with a lot of different organizations all over the world. We use a model called Brief, Frequent, Focused. And so that's short content, like once a month or once every other month for like 10 minutes, to keep security top of people's mind year-round, and not just kind of once a year for an hour, kind of death by PowerPoint. But the idea is constantly training people. And you can go to securitymentor.com, one word, securitymentor.com, to learn about Security Mentor. And I blog at Government Technology Magazine, Lorman on Cybersecurity, and then also my Twitter handle is at GovCSO, so at GovCSO. And be happy to interact with people there.
All right, thank you.
Go ahead, Matthew.
Thank you very much, Dan Lorman of Security Mentor in Grand Ledge. Thanks for your expertise as always. We're going to wrap this segment up now. So right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M-Squared TechCast, proudly part of the PodcastDetroit.com network. Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with segment three of the Monday, November 28th M Squared TechCast, episode 60 of this little fun fest that Mike Brennan and I do every Monday afternoon.
Whether you like it or not, right?
Right, so, exactly.
And we have on the line Melissa Sheldon, who's a senior research analyst at the Workforce Intelligent Network of Southeast Michigan. And I hopefully have Erica Carlson, the Director of Apprenticeship and Training at Detroit Labs. Are you both there?
Yes, we are. Hello.
I am.
Great. Okay. Wonderful.
Wonderful. All right.
So I love it when technology works. That's a great thing.
Yes, you know, so we don't like to do all call-in shows, but this one has worked out that way because sometimes some of our call-ins don't call in, but we're good today. So anyway, Melissa, looking at the IT industry in Southeast Michigan, what share of the industry are women? I mean, that have these are in these occupations, and specifically, what's going on in Metro Detroit? I've heard all sorts of numbers, less than 20%. What are the numbers?
Absolutely. So, I'll start with Southeast Michigan. In the 16 county area that WIN analyzes for most of our reporting, there are 27.4%. of those occupations are held by women.
Really?
So these are all IT occupations. So about 73% men, 28% women.
Hmm.
And that's really not that different from the nation or from the Metro Detroit area. The nation is 74-26 split. So we're really only slightly more diverse here in Southeast Michigan, and Detroit's right on par with that. So women, we're not taking up a lot of those jobs, but a little bit more than we used to in the past.
You know, actually, I'd heard the numbers were much lower. We've had a number of women technologists on the show, and they were saying they thought that women IT professionals in the workforce were closer to 20%. So these numbers actually are higher than what we've heard before.
Mm-hmm. And this includes, you have to think of it as these are just occupations and people employed in these occupations. So they not necessarily referring to the IT industry, but these are IT occupations. So maybe in the IT industry, women probably are representing a much lower percentage of those occupations
within
the industry.
So why don't we define then, I'm a little confused, and probably the audience is too, how are they defined as IT occupations but not in IT? What does that mean?
That would mean, a good example would be your manufacturing firm. They likely have an IT person who manages all of their computer networking and installation of software. They troubleshoot things for that firm, but they work in the manufacturing industry. So their employment may be reported in that industry rather than the IT industry because their occupations are skill based, whereas industry is obviously what that company is producing, either product or service-wise.
Rather than the actual occupation of the individual, right?
Exactly. Yeah, rather than the actual skills of the worker.
Okay. So what do you think is behind this lack of diversity that we see in technology? And I've been seeing it for 20 years now.
Sure. So, hi, this is Erica.
Hi.
So, when it comes to diversity in tech, first you look at the field. And I know, I'll give my own experience. For me, as a young woman coming up through high school and college, I looked at engineering roles and I saw lots of people who didn't look like me. Girls don't tend to be encouraged into math and science. At least they haven't. That's been changing more recently. But so it starts very young. Girls are kind of filtered out of the pipeline very early. So a lot of efforts for diversity in tech now focus on that pipeline, involving getting more women, more people from underrepresented groups into technology in the first place. So that can start as early as grade school, can carry on through high school computer science classes, encouraging more women to participate in computer science programs in college. So there's a lot of pipeline efforts out there, which is very important because to build a truly diverse tech workforce, we definitely have to start with a diverse pool of talent. That said, efforts that focus on the pipeline can ignore what happens once those people get into the field. Women tend to drop out of technical roles at a much higher rate than men do.
Yeah, I saw a study on that recently. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a number of reasons for that. I mean, this is just a slice of them. You know, if you're a woman in tech or a minority in tech, there's a real lack of visible role models of people in leadership positions where you look at that person and go, okay, well, they did that, so could I. People who don't embody the kind of typical tech worker tend to get passed over for promotions, for opportunities, for funding. A lot of workplaces don't put effort in or don't know how to create inclusive environments that feel safe and comfortable for all kinds of people. Unfortunately, there's no shortage of stories from people who have had negative and hurtful experiences in the workforce. And that, you know, over time builds up and people tend to leave and say, okay, I'm going to go work somewhere that I feel more comfortable, that I feel like I belong. So getting people from underrepresented groups into technology is really important and a great first step. Figuring out how to keep them there is equally important.
Okay, Melissa, occupations in IT are on the rise in Michigan, and there's more recruiting happening in that area as well. How is this growth opportunity particularly going to impact women? Did we lose Melissa?
So she's there.
Are you there?
I'm here. Sorry
okay.
about that.
All right.
That's a really good question, and I just quickly want to talk about the demand in our area and then how that develops that opportunity for women. And just in Southeast Michigan alone, in job postings during the second quarter of this year, there were just over 17,000 job advertisements for employers looking for IT workers. So as you can imagine, that is an incredible demand. Over 17,000 postings, and if you're looking at that in comparison to how many people are completing degrees and earning certifications or degrees in this area in Southeast Michigan, that's only about 3,400 people. So there's this huge gap of employers need these people and they need them right away, but there just aren't enough people to fill that demand. We're not producing enough individuals with the credentials, and it goes hand in hand with what Erica was talking about. It with women, especially those women at a young age, are not directed towards careers in IT. So this is a huge opportunity for women to become trained in these fields. They can look to partners like the Michigan Works Agency, the community colleges, all the different wonderful programs that are out there for training, and try to get into some of these positions. A lot of these positions that are posted, even at the entry level, they start at more than $20 an hour, and most of the advertised jobs offer more than $75,000 a year as a salary. So it's become really competitive because there aren't as many people available to apply for these jobs.
Hmm. Interesting.
Okay, so how do we, you know, in the industry and its partners, its allies, educate women about the IT jobs that exist? And, you know, how do we reach them with information about these career paths early on? And I suppose really you have to get all the way down into the middle school years with girls, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And so as companies and as industry partners, there are a lot of fantastic groups out there that are doing a lot of good work to get more women to the industry at all ages and at all levels. So you can support those groups, and I'll talk about a few of them in a minute. But you can also reach out to local organizations. There are groups for women. There are groups for people of color. All of these people who are specifically interested in software development and technology and those kinds of careers, you can reach out to those groups and say, hey, you know, we'd like to, you know, co-promote with you, or we'd like to try to hire some of your membership, or we would like to just talk to you and see, you know, how we can create a better working environment for, you know, people who don't look like our typical employee. So there's lots of options, absolutely.
Okay, so Erica, since you have the floor, what is being done to further diversify the industry, and more importantly, who's doing it?
Sure. So it's interesting. You know, I kind of got into diversity in tech at about the same time that I started my career a few years ago. And at the time, the word diversity was kind of equated with more women. And what's been really cool for me is seeing the term diversity kind of trend away from that in the last few years. Diversity definitely includes women, absolutely. It also means making opportunities and making the industry more welcoming for people of color, for LGBT people, people with disabilities, people from all kinds of socioeconomic backgrounds. And there are a lot of organizations that serve all of those groups. One of my favorites is an initiative called Fund Club, F-U-N-D, Fund. And they help publicize and support a lot of excellent groups that
are working to increase diversity in the tech industry. So they're really great. I have been involved since the beginning with Girl Develop It, which is an organization that provides affordable, accessible software classes for women who want to learn how to code. There are chapters, over 50 chapters in the country now. And we have a large one in Detroit, about 3,000 members. There's an organization called Black Girls Code that has done work in Michigan that teaches young women of color how to code and gets them interested in early age. Code 2040 provides support and interview coaching and engineering fellowships for people of color in tech. Call Back Women encourages more women to speak at technical conferences. There's groups all across the board. So Twitter is a great place to get started if you want to kind of explore that a little further.
All right, so why don't we talk a little bit about, we got about 2 minutes left, so why don't we talk about what the Workforce Intelligence Network of Southeast Michigan is, and then for Erica, what's going on with Detroit Labs? So why don't you take it first, Melissa?
Sure, thank you. The Workforce Intelligence Network, we are a partnership of Michigan Works Agencies and community colleges, and we really have three different focuses. We have a data focus where we are providing workforce analysis to help these organizations as well as their students and their job seekers make better decisions using the information that's available to them about our local labor market and what's in demand. So like these opportunities in IT, we want to make sure people are aware of this and how much these jobs pay and how they can get connected with opportunities to train for them. And then we also focus on policy and employer strategies. So that would be where we are bringing in those employer partners, making sure we understand what their need is, and helping them develop their workforce.
Okay, we got 1 minute. Erica, that's what you got. That's what time you have to describe Detroit Labs.
All right. At Detroit Labs, we are a mobile consultancy. We build iOS Android applications for our clients. We are currently hiring for developers, QA engineers, designers, delivery leads. We are always encouraging people of diverse backgrounds to apply, and we are constantly working to improve our diversity as a company. We also have our apprenticeship program, which is a 3-month training program that we created to help build our own workforce internally. And that is an opportunity for people who have no prior experience to come in. We spend 3 months training them. We pay them to make the program accessible, and then we hire them when they successfully graduate. So that's what we've got going on right now.
All right. Websites, please, for both organizations.
DetroitLabs.com.
Okay.
Easy.
Nice and easy one.
Yes.
Ours is a little more complicated, but it's wins-semich.org.
Okay. Well, thanks very much to Melissa Sheldon, Senior Research Analyst at the Workforce
Intelligence
Network. Yes, thank you very much. I just always want to say win. And Erica Carlson, Director of Apprenticeship and Training at Detroit Labs. And thanks very much. And we'll be back in just a minute with the final segment of the day here on Episode 60 of the M Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you are indeed listening to the M Squared TechCast. Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast, the only internet radio program you are listening to right now.
I hope, anyway, right?
You're right.
Well, that could be multitasking.
They could have more than one computer going. You never know.
Yes. All right. We have on the line all the way from Rochester Hills, way up there, way up north, Rick Becker is the CEO of Cloud Tech One. How are you doing, Rick?
I'm doing well up here in far and away rural Rochester.
Rural Rochester, way up there, you know. So, I'm privy to some inside information. And can we talk about the Automation Alley thing now, or is that good, or what?
Yeah, I mean, we got a lot going on out there at Automation Alley. It's not just one thing.
Well, let's share it with the world. Tell us all about it.
Well, one of the things that's been missing out there for members has been the ability to participate in committee meetings and other events remotely. And we've changed that. You used to have to be there all the time to be able to be involved at all. And we've recently implemented a really nice video streaming technology that's going to allow us to video publish all of the events, all of the Alley events. Members will be able to utilize the same technology for their events. We can also take those same events and archive them or make them into webinars. Hmm. And then one of the things we're working on right now, and you and I still have some things to chat about, but we're actually going to take this out to the world and give the members the ability to do live streaming video events at their facilities. So whenever anybody has a new location open or something like that, something very important to them, they can share it with the world and do that through this Automation Alley technology capabilities.
Think of a radio remote. We'll have that capability, and I'm going to be involved in that to a degree. But again, we still have to work out all the details. Lots of exciting stuff going on. And of course, Automation Alley and I announced about a month ago that we're launching the new video news updates. And I want to thank Rick because Rick sponsored those for us so we could get those up and running. So when you watch those at the end, you'll see his smiling face talking about Cloud Tech One. So talk a little bit more about Cloud Tech One. You have a university. I've been trying to get you to set up one of your classes in Ann Arbor, so it makes it easier on me. But
I'm looking at January, boss. I'm thinking January is Ann Arbor. We'll hit it up downtown somewhere. I'll lean on you for some guidance there, and we'll get out there and meet and greet some of the technology people in the Ann Arbor area. But you mentioned our Cloud Tech One University, and that's kind of our way of getting out to meet people and get people to meet each other and create partnerships and learn more about the cloud. And that's really where it stemmed from it originally. We were finding that people weren't embracing the cloud technology in the corporate world because they didn't understand it, didn't feel that it was secure. And we knew that all of those things that were myths were untrue and just that, myths. So we started educating them on various cloud technologies, and people were then starting to adopt them. Talking to my colleagues, there were a lot of people out there that really didn't know enough about it either, and so they weren't selling it or explaining it to their customers. And so we ended up opening up our business to those people and allowing them to actually sell our cloud services through us under their name, giving their customers the ability to do these kinds of things without having to ramp up their own cloud business. And that's been very successful as well. That university, it kind of parallels something else that I'm doing over at the Alley. And the Alley in general is trying to tell the world about how technologically savvy we are here in Southeast Michigan, or Michigan. And we agree. I've been doing this for 35 years, and so I know a lot of really smart, savvy technical people out there, and they've installed and put together a whole lot of really cool solutions. And so what we're doing at the Alley is we're trying to bring more people together to make that statement and let the world know. And to that end, we've brought together numerous events. The last one, I think, was last month. where we partnered with CompTIA and brought in a whole mess of people. I want to say there was probably 60 there on that day, and these were all my competitors and my partners and everybody just getting in the room and talking about technology and getting trained on cloud, how to sell cloud, how to use cloud, and how to partner was one of the biggest flavors of the day. And that's what we keep trying to tell people is, in my opinion, there aren't any competitors. You know, we do as much business through what I call co-opetition as we do through our direct sales staff. And so there's, you know, real big keen interest in getting the technology people of Michigan out and about and talking to one another and in general, creating a better buzz for technology here in Michigan.
All right. I was going to ask you how your November 17th event went. So it sounds like it went really, really well.
It did. It did. In fact, I know a business that took place right there on the floor. I introduced a couple of people to each other that I've also heard since have closed business with one another. And that's the way it should be. You know, the only way that you can ever understand really what somebody does is to sit down and have a conversation with them. And in our industry, for whatever reason, people are rather standoffish, you know, hold their cards close to their vest, and so they don't have an opportunity to let the rest of their colleagues know what they do. And we're all about trying to teach them to change that, in fact, completely reverse it, and be as wildly open as you can. And a lot of people will originally tell me that, you know, well, I can't do that. My competitors, you know, they'll come behind me and take my business and take my customers, and that's just not the way it happens. In fact, you know, I dare say I grow my business much more that way. Everything's right out open in the front, you know, and I just can't say enough about it.
So talk a little bit about what your focus is. Obviously, you're doing stuff in the cloud, but what particular industries, customers you can talk about, give people a sense of what you're doing.
Yeah, we've been what's called a managed service provider for many years, and we still do that, right? We have small and medium businesses that outsource their IT to us to provide them with an enterprise class help desk experience for their employees. And we do that much, much cheaper than they would ever be able to do that with direct hire employees. And then over time, we started using more and more cloud technologies to continue to drive down the cost for those customers. And so there were, you know, we were putting in servers and storage and business continuity and disaster recovery solutions, hosted telephony solutions, spam filtering, the whole Office 365 and Azure suite. Software as a service, you know, tons and tons of it. And it isn't really a specific industry that we cater to. We're very horizontal because the cloud technology has a return on investment and total cost of ownership equation that every industry can take advantage of. I've yet to find any instance where we were not able to do it better, faster, and cheaper using cloud technology over on-premise. And the CPAs and our customers' financial people love us because we're shifting these big, huge capital expenses over to, you know, a subscription-based operating expense on their books, and it just, you know, helps them out all around.
All right. I know you're growing. I know you've been hiring folks.
That's the Matt Roush question. Yeah. The Matt Roush question. It's leftover from the last recession. Whenever I talk to a locally based tech business, I always ask, A, are you hiring? And B, in what roles? And now that it's getting tougher to hire, I've added a third question, which is how challenging is recruiting for you? But let's start with the first couple. Do you have openings in which roles?
Yes, we are hiring today. We just hired some people in the last couple of weeks. We're looking for network engineers right now.
And what kind of skill set would that require?
Well, I don't need high-end data center skills. I'd like to get a hold of people actually when they're younger and enthusiastic and train them up, mm-hmm. where they haven't learned any bad habits, so to speak.
But only a few, maybe.
You want them to have the basics. And, you know, and that could be just desktop stuff with a smattering of server work. And then we start to introduce them to virtualization and heavier server work and more firewall stuff. But we do that with our training so that they get the detail with which we do it and the way that we like to do things. And so we're looking for some of those people right now. Hiring is a challenge these days. Because, as you know, technology unemployment is 0% right now, and essentially we're just hiring away from each other, stealing talent from one another in our industry, which is another reason why we're out there talking up the industry, because we're starting at the educational institutions, and something that you're very knowledgeable about, Matt, and that is we're trying to make them aware of what we're needing in terms of that talent and hoping that they'll target that talent and put more effort into it and churn out some people. And the whole buzz thing with letting people know how much technology there is in Michigan is intentful, so that young people, when they are getting trained up in our industry, realize that they don't have to leave to go and find work in this area, right? Mm-hmm. We've got tons of it. So all that stuff is all tied together, and I hope that answers your two questions.
Well, and I also hope, on a purely personal note, get ready to ring the bell here. I'm
looking for the bell.
I hope you're
over there in the corner.
Okay.
All right.
I hope you're in touch with the Department of Mathematics and Computer Science at Lawrence Tech, which is my employer. So that I hope that you're working with them, and if you're not, but would like to, private message me after this segment, and I can get you in touch with the right people.
I know that we've put stuff out there. I would say anonymously, Matt. If you want to give it a shove for me, I would really love that.
Okay, will do.
Fix you right up there, buddy. Okay, cool. So I know we've got all these people excited. They want to come work for you. They want to do business with you. How do they get in touch with you?
Well, they can do that a number of different ways. You can dial us up. 855-6-CLOUD-1 is the number. You can come to our website, www.cloudtech1.com. You can dial me direct. My DID is 586-480-2865. I'm not shy. A couple of things I'd like to put out there just to strengthen our position in the marketplace, if I could. We were awarded in September the top 100 cloud service provider in the nation. Sliding in it under 100 is tough to do, but we did it. We were recently nominated just last week as one of the top 50 Michigan companies to watch. We're pretty proud of that. It means that we're doing something, right? Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you bet.
We were also
awarded what was considered one of the top 20 disaster recovery solutions by CIO Magazine. And we got a lot of things going on, and it's because we've got a lot of oars in the water, and we're stirring the pot as much as we can. Doing the right things for the right people.
All right. Thanks very much, Rick Beckers of Cloud Tech One in Rochester Hills. Want to thank all our guests on the show today. Rick, most recently, Melissa Sheldon of Wynn and Erica Carlson of the Detroit Labs, Dan Lorman of Security Mentor, and Mark Becker of CDH.
And this is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch.
And you've been listening to M Squared TechCast. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.